Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Sports with Friends. This is episode 169. I know I say this too often, but I can't believe we have a show that has 169 episodes. And lately, I will tell you this. If you look at the past episodes, I've had a lot of friends, and I've had a lot of friends of friends. That's the deal. Sometimes they're like personal friends. And this guy that our guest is today, I consider him a friend. You know, I don't know if we've ever actually hung out in person, but I've been on his shows. He's been on my shows. We follow each other on Twitter. I am a huge fan of his work. I knew him first from his work in New York. He was on WFAN, and then he moved out to Cleveland and worked with some great people. He works with Daryl Ryder. He works with Andy Roth. There's a lot of people that he works with, and he does a great show on 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. Now, why would I do a podcast about Cleveland? Because when the Cavaliers fired the basketball coach, I didn't care. I care so little about the NBA. I thought it was a little strange that LeBron James leaves and all of a sudden they fire the guy after six games. But then Cleveland decides this is the time to fire the Browns coach after he actually had wins as opposed to winless seasons. I said, well, you combine these stories, that is an excuse to talk to my man, Adam the Bull. Adam, welcome to Sports with Friends. How are you, buddy?
I'm great, Seth. Thank you so much for the kind words. It's great to talk to you, and I'm excited to be here today.
Yes, it's a strange one. So let's do a couple of minutes just on you for the people who are listening who don't know you, and then we'll get into the shenanigans that are Cleveland sports, which you did for 5 hours today, I'm assuming. So you're probably sick. You're like, ugh, the Browns, oh God. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how you started in this business and what did I miss of my elaborate intro?
Well, you know, it's funny. I always wanted to do something in this business. It was always my dream, even as a kid. As soon as I realized I was not good enough to play Major League Baseball, I said I wanted to be in sports. I really wanted to be a baseball play-by-play man, and my first job was actually as a minor league play-by-play man for baseball. I was the voice of the Batavia Muck Dogs from 1999 to 2001. That's right. And guys who played for the Muck Dogs while I was there include Ryan Howard, Chase Utley, Ryan Madsen, who obviously just pitched in the World Series, and Marlon Byrd. So four guys that had long major league careers. And that's where I started. And then I worked in upstate New York where I went to school for a number of years before getting the opportunity with The Fan in New York in 2007. And you got the rest. The rest is history.
So let's do a quick moment on the New York Penn League. What years were you with the New York Penn League? I was there in 95. They were not the Double Days, but they were the Auburn Astros. And they had Julio Lugo and Ramon Castro.
It's funny because I was there from 99 to 01. And
okay, so you're a little younger than me.
Yeah. And so Auburn and the stadiums in Auburn and Batavia are basically identical.
Right.
they look almost exactly the same, and they're two of the smaller markets in the Penn League, especially now. Batavia, I think, lost their team, or maybe is about to now, which is unfortunate.
Oh, no.
And I think Auburn was still an Astros affiliate, I believe, if I remember correctly. It's been so long now when I was there. Batavia was a Phillies affiliate at the time. I think they were the Cardinals until the last year or two. But I enjoyed my time there. It was a great first experience. Met so many great people. I'll never forget one of the most – any baseball fan will love this. One of the coolest people I met. I met Dallas Green, but I met Johnny Padres.
Oh, wow.
He was like a roving minor league instructor, and these guys would come in. And, man, every time he came to town, we would just sit and talk baseball. And I remember he was telling me a story about the World Series with the Dodgers, and I said to him, I couldn't remember offhand, and I said, so did you pitch a complete game in whatever game we were talking about? I can't remember which one it was. And he said to me with his gravelly old voice, he said, of course I did. You know, like, how could you insult me and say, you know, right. Nowadays.
How could you consider that?
Old. Yeah.
That's funny. That's pretty funny. Yeah, the Auburn team, their manager was Manny Acta.
Wow.
And Bob Watson was the GM, and it was before he got the Yankee job. If you think about Bob Watson, he went to the right. And then Bob Watson wound up becoming the late Darrell Hamilton's boss. at the on-field operations. And Daryl left the radio show that I was doing with him to join Bob's team. And the story always goes is we had many, many adult beverages at Bob Watson's desk. He's Daryl's gone now, so I can tell that story. But
yeah,
we had, but Bob's still alive, so hopefully he's not a subscriber.
I know many of those stories. I tell you, one of the things that I really remember, I remember Chase Utley's first professional at bat was in was in Jamestown, New York, and he had a against the Jamestown Jammers, hit a home run. He had a home run off the right center field scoreboard in his first minor league at bat. I remember calling an inning from that same stadium while in the bathroom because that you could. I sent my microphone. I like threw it into the bathroom because you could actually see the field from the bathroom, or at least at the time. I don't know. And also, another vivid memory is when our team got into a brawl with the Williamsport Crosscutters, which was the Pirates affiliate at the time. And I think it was over a girl. One of the players was interested in the girl on the other team. I don't even remember, but there was a huge brawl, and the manager of the Muckdugs was a guy named Frank Klebe, who nobody ever heard of. But the manager of the Crosscutters, I believe if I remember correctly, was Curtis Wilkerson. And diehard baseball fans will remember that name. And they squared off. Like, they were boxing each other at home plate during this brawl. It was crazy.
That's funny. Other managers in the New York Penn League when I was there was Joel Skinner. And
yes.
Bob Guerin, who wound up becoming a bench coach with the Dodgers, and I knew him with the Mets, and all of those teams. Bob Guerin was a major league manager at one point. That's great. All right, well, Adam, thanks for coming on. We are New York Penn League recap. I knew we would go. This is why I told you there's no time constraint. There was no way I was going to say, you know what, this is going to be a 12 minute podcast, because again, there's a Cleveland fan who downloads this. He listened to your show going, this is what they're talking about. Like, we haven't even gotten to why we wanted to have you on. All right. So the two firings in a span of what, 36 hours, like 48 hours
pretty
or something
much.
Like that. Here's the thing that I don't understand. Let's do the Cavs first, because this one I understand less. What did the Cavaliers think about Tyronn Lue over the summer when they had to put a team together that wasn't going to have LeBron James, and LeBron James leaves, and it's only been six games. Like, what did they expect was going to, like, if he's 1-5 or 2-4, is he not fired? I just think you did a disservice to your fan base. An interim coach for game 7 is an insult to your fan base.
Yeah, on the surface, it's absurd, right? The guy just won a championship a couple of years ago, and the best player in basketball leaves the team. Why is he fired? I believe that the record has nothing to do with it. I think there is they were at odds, the front office and the coaching staff. So they decided when LeBron left that they were not going to blow it up, that they were not going to tank, as they probably should have. But the ego of the owner is too big for that. So they re-signed Kevin Love to an extension, which I thought was a major blunder, and they got off to this bad start. Now, the front office, the young GM, Kobe Altman, who took over last year, he wants to play the young players. Colin Sexton was their first-round draft pick. Jetty Osman is a guy they brought over from Europe last year. And then they have some other young players. And they want those guys getting a lot of playing time. The Cavs have some savvy vets who are, you know, average at best players, but were part of the championship teams. And Ty Lue wanted to play those guys, Kyle Korver and J.R. Smith and Channing Frye and the like. And ultimately, they were at odds because of that. Now, I also believe, I was told numerous times last year by people that I trust, that Ty Lue was not happy, even with LeBron here. He was not happy coaching the Cavs. He left towards the end of the year for a couple of weeks for medical reasons. Don't know all the details, but he was dealing with a lot of stress. And so I believe that Ty Lue decided that his money was guaranteed, that he wanted to play the veterans, and he didn't care what the front office thought. And I don't think he minds that much that he got fired, in all honesty. I don't know that for a fact, That's just based on what I was told about his unhappiness. I'm guessing he's got that guaranteed money coming. I don't think he's that upset about being fired.
Give me the timeline. I just want to do a little on LeBron. What's the timeline? Was he on the Heat when you went to Cleveland?
He was, yeah. So we started this radio station, 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland, on August 29th, 2011. And now 7 years and 2 months exactly later, here we are still doing it. And yes, he was in Miami. He had left for Miami not too long before that. And so, yeah, he had been in Miami for a few years. I never thought he'd come back.
But you were not a Cleveland guy. So you came there and he was public enemy number one, correct?
He was, no doubt about it. Yes, he was very unpopular. Fans were rooting against him. He got booed quite often. So, he was definitely the least popular player.
And then how did you as a broadcaster handle him coming back? Because I think that's the best story. Like, I love stories like that. Like, I don't know LeBron James. I do have one LeBron James story that I do want to tell, but we can get to that later. But I don't know him. And then when he came back and delivered on his promise, it just seemed like, you know, he solidified his legacy. And like the LeBron James that you talk about now is literally like a different person than the one in 2011.
No doubt. The guy went from the most hated to the most loved in this town. This town will always be football first, but with LeBron, he captured the public, no doubt about it. When he came back, the people were crying. People were so excited. For 99% of the fans here, all was forgiven. Some of the fans went too far originally with the anger, but that was, you saw the burning of the jerseys on TV, and publicly it was made to believe that everybody was burning jerseys. That was silly. There were a few people went a little too far, as would be the case in any situation. But generally, most people didn't. They were just angry. And when he came back, all was forgiven and everybody was excited. And a championship was anticipated, even though the city hadn't won a championship in a half a century.
But what was it like covering that? And what was it like covering him? Did you, because, your show, kind of goes, you can't go to early morning. Like, I guess you could go to shoot around, but you can't go to, before the game or anything like that. Like, what was it like covering? What was your interaction with him?
I didn't honestly have any interaction with LeBron, which, believe it or not, like, he didn't do any sports talk radio at all. He didn't do any local interviews at all. You had to be in practice.
Was he a jerk about it, or he just, that was his thing? Like, if I have to do
Jerk. He wasn't a jerk about it. Generally, the Cavs aren't on our station, so it was really – it was much, we did a lot of interviews with Brown. Like, I know some of the Brown players a little bit. Certainly knew some of the Indians players a little bit. We've interviewed a lot of them. Right. The Cavs were a little harder to get guests from, and certainly LeBron did whatever he wanted, and he wasn't rude about it or anything, no. But so I was really just covering him from afar. There was no personal interaction with LeBron, which is disappointing. But the only good thing about that is then you can't get your judgment clouded. And so I came at it from an unbiased perspective. I thought maybe sometimes if you're covering a guy, you get too close and, now your judgment can be clouded. But covering him, as we did, it was, there were ups and downs along the way. And I wasn't afraid to criticize him when I thought he was doing something negatively or that negatively affected the team. But overall, it was a fun run. And after the first few years I was here when the Indians were kind of mediocre and the Browns, have been terrible the entire time I'm here, to finally have a team in the playoffs was extremely exciting. Cleveland is such a, I haven't lived in a million cities, but it's so different than my other experiences from the East Coast and I wonder if it's like that in every Midwestern city, I'm not sure, but Cleveland is so, everybody in this city, in New York, there's zillions of sports fans. Same thing in Philly, same thing in Boston. But there are a lot of people that don't care about sports at all. Right. A lot of people.
Right.
In Cleveland, my guess, and this is just anecdotally, I believe a much higher percentage, it's a much smaller city, but a much higher percentage of people at least have some interest in sports. Like, in the 7+ years I've been living here, I've almost never met a person that had no interest in sports whatsoever. Very rare. I meet people in New York, New Jersey, Philly all the time that, you know, had no interest, couldn't care less. Couldn't name a player on the team. And that's very rare here. So when the Cavs won, that I'll never forget the day of that parade, because the parade went right by our radio station. I was on the roof of a building it was mind blowing. The amount of people that were at this parade, it was beautiful. It's a great day. A lot of crying, a lot of emotions. The day LeBron came back, the day the Cavs won the championship, and the day of the parade are 3 days I'll never forget on the radio.
Wasn't it? There's a great joke from that. There's wasn't it the was it 1.5 million people at the parade? What was the number?
The number was 1.3.
Okay, 1.3. So the joke goes, the Indians that night had a home game. And in order to go to the parade route, if you go anywhere in Cleveland, you go by Progressive Field.
Yes.
And so that means that 1.29 million people walked by that ballpark and said, nah. They had like 18,000 that night.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
I think people had a long day. They... There was a lot of drinking that morning and afternoon.
I would have said at 8 o'clock that night, the game starts, let's say 7 o'clock, like 7:45, make an announcement. Just say, if you're still in downtown, it's free. Just come in.
Yeah.
And
just
fill
the people in there.
Just fill the joint. Like, just to have a good vibe from what was such a great day in the community. I don't know.
What was amazing, Seth, is that, like, people were like leaving their cars on the highway. Like, people were just abandoning their cars for a few hours just to get in the mix. And yet it was a really peaceful and great day. There were very few arrests. I don't think there were any like serious arrests. I think it was all minor stuff and nothing like really serious happened. I was a little concerned. Like,
knocking over telephone poles or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I mean, people were really, it was just a lot of joy and love and happiness of generations of fans that hadn't seen a title.
That's so fun. I have this idea for LeBron James. Last thing on LeBron James, but I have this idea. There's a great story. The first finals against the Warriors. So the year before they win it all,
right?
There was a night where the Cavaliers won a game, and I heard this story secondhand. So I don't know the night. I don't know which game it was, but the Cavaliers had won a game, and LeBron James tweets something to the effect of celebrating a big finals win with a Teen Titans Go marathon. And
right.
I'm a superhero person. I do another podcast called The Hall of Justice. I mean, I kind of connect it to the genre. And my kids, I have little kids, and they love Teen Titans Go. And the people who follow, the people who created that show saw LeBron James's tweet and replied to him and said, oh my God, you like our show. We will totally write you in if you'll be a voice on it. And LeBron James wrote him back and said, yeah, sure. And so there's an episode of Teen Titans Go where the Teen Titans go to a basketball camp and they meet LeBron James. And LeBron James has this one tick. He has a tick that every time he walks, he must dribble a basketball and say the words, dribble, 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 dribble. And my daughter was 4 at the time, and she thinks LeBron James is the funniest person. She has never seen him play a game of basketball.
That's great.
It's a great story. So what I want to do, and I wanted to do this when he was with the Cavs, but I never could get it logistically put together. But what I want to do is I want to speak to LeBron James for 4 minutes. I want to do a Hall of Justice podcast with him. I do not want to ask him about basketball, the Lakers, the Cavaliers, his reality shows, nothing. I want to speak to him only about Teen Titans Go.
Yeah, I'm sure he would enjoy that because he always gets basketball questions.
Right. I think it would work.
You know, that's fun. I find when I do interviews with players, I often try to ask them, you know, questions that are a little off the beaten path of sports. You know, because that'll loosen guys up a little more.
Sure.
So I think that's fun. And I actually do a segment on my weekend show on CBS Sports Radio.
That I've been on, yes.
Yeah. So I do a segment called the TV and Movie Report. I was never into comic books or superheroes, but in the last 6 months, I've become obsessed. I watched all the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, and I've watched all the Marvel Netflix shows. So I love that stuff too.
So yeah, so that's my LeBron James wish list. LeBron James on the Hall of Justice talking about Teen Titans Go.
That would be awesome.
And then there's the Browns. Okay.
Yes.
I mean, they went winless. I mean, it was unprecedented how bad they were. I remember when the Lions were 1-15, and everyone thought, like, that's as bad. That's as low as you can go. And they went 0-16. And when they were 0-16, for whatever reason, they believed in Hugh Jackson. Like, they supported him. They went out of their way to support him. Now, in a season in which they actually have wins, and you could start to say that the corner has at least been turned, not that the rebuild is turning into a playoff team yet, but at least they are better now than they were when he took the job. And it's 2 days later after Tyronn Lue gets fired. Now is when you fire Hugh Jackson? What? Why?
Well, obviously, he should have been fired at the end of last year. He was 0-16. He was 1-31 in two seasons. He convinced ownership that the previous GM was to blame. They gave him no talent, and so he should be given a pass. Ownership, I believe, would not have fired him today. John Dorsey is the new GM of the Browns. He did a good job this offseason in adding to the talent. There's been a lot of distraction on this team. I have been calling for the coach. I don't have a problem with the coach being fired now. I thought he should have been fired at the end of last year. I've been saying for weeks he should be fired. Now, they have won two games this year, but the team has the coach is just flat out a bad coach, and that's why he didn't deserve to come back this year. But he convinced the owners that he deserved another shot. I'm sure the GM didn't want to bring him in or didn't want to keep him when he got the job, but has the team improved? It has, but it had no choice. They were 0-16. It couldn't be, and they added a lot of talent, so they were going to win more games. But in the critical moments with this head coach, Hugh Jackson, the team has constantly failed. They've lost almost every close game. They've played close games. They lose them almost every time. His clock management is poor. His attention to detail is poor. He is clearly insecure in his status because he had to constantly remind everyone he's the head coach. And then after last week's loss to Tampa Bay, he kind of got into it with his offensive coordinator by saying, you know, maybe he needed to do more. And it created a controversy on the team. The offensive coordinator, by the way, was also fired today, Todd Haley, because he was reportedly undermining the head coach. So this has been a franchise of dysfunction. Since Jimmy Haslam bought the team 6 years ago, roughly, there's been infighting. The chain of command has been extremely poor. You've had four major fights between either front office members and coaches or coaches and assistant coaches. Four in 6 years. That's crazy. That has led to constant dysfunction. The owners hired coaches and then hired the GMs. So nobody's ever on the same page. They forced assistant coaches to work with head coach. It's just been ugly. So while, yes, on the surface, it seems silly that you let a coach stay after going 0-16 and 1-31 and then fire him after he's won 2 of 8 games, it was just overdue. I think the GM, according to multiple people, convinced basically ownership. Ownership, I think, still did not want to fire him. I think the feeling was that the rookie quarterback, Baker Mayfield, the first overall pick, was being negatively affected by the infighting between the head coach and the offensive coordinator. And ultimately that, and not the record, was the final straw to get Hugh Jackson pushed out of town. But he should be fired. The man has coached 40 games for the Cleveland Browns, and they've won three. And he did not win a single road game, not one single road game, in 20 tries for the Browns. And that's just unacceptable. It shouldn't have gone on this long.
Well, but why? Yeah. But what was the tipping point? Like, I'm buying everything you said because I heard your show, yeah. And I kind of knew where this. It was a leading question because I kind of knew that this take at this point. But what was like? Why today? What was the final straw?
Yeah. Well, I think there were a couple of things. So after the Tampa Bay game, his comments basically. Blaming the offensive coordinator for the problems. It's a thing he's done. He threw the previous GM under the bus. He's done it with players. He's done it with other coaches, and now he kind of did it again. And that created the dynamic between the OC and the head coach was really bad. There was a chance that just the OC was going to get fired until the GM talked the owner into doing both. And I think what happened was this week, it got worse between the two. They clearly couldn't work together. And then they got smoked by Pittsburgh. The team seemed to quit at the end of the game. And Baker Mayfield seemed a little beaten up after the game. And I think the combination of those things, losing Jimmy Haslam used to be a minority owner of the Steelers, and that was the team that crushed him yesterday. And I think those things combined put the final nail in this situation.
Did you set the franchise back a full season now? Is like this season a wasted year now? Because Baker Mayfield now is his first season is going to have, you know, in essence, two coaches and then a third in his, you know, 12 months as a pro. I don't think it's a huge difference. I mean, he seems like an amazing talent. I've been very impressed with the glimmers that I've seen. You know, and I'll admit I watch highlights. I don't watch Cleveland right. Brown games.
Yeah, sure.
But at the same time, you know, did they do damage? Not irreparable damage, but did they do damage by letting Hugh Jackson coach this season? Because if everything you're saying is true, the not. Like, how much damage did they do by not pulling the trigger when they had the chance?
I think it was a negative for Baker Mayfield that everything went down the way that it did. Leaving Hugh Jackson here, forcing him to take Todd Haley as an offensive coordinator, the bad relationship between the two, I think it put Baker Mayfield in a bad spot. However, everything I know about this kid, between interviewing him, other people that have talked to him, things I've heard about him, I don't think there's any permanent damage. I'd be very surprised. I think he's extremely tough-minded. He plays with a chip on his shoulder, and that sounds cliche, but, you know, he's a shorter quarterback who didn't get a scholarship at two different universities and ended up winning a Heisman Trophy. I mean, the kid has always gotten the most and when not much was expected initially, and now a lot is expected, and I think he's up to the task, as other quarterbacks have not been in Cleveland. So while I do think it is a negative this year, I believe that if the Browns find the right coach, which they haven't in forever, that in the long run it will be not a big deal that this happened, and maybe he'll learn a few lessons from this bad first experience, and that it will help him going forward. So yes, in the short term, I think there's some negative, but I don't think it's irreparable. I don't think he's been irreparably harmed at all.
Oh boy. Where do you go from here? You mentioned, and this is again, I would assume most Cleveland fans hear you say this kind of stuff all the time. But for the person listening in, you know, Wisconsin or London, England, or wherever people listen to this podcast, what makes it Cleveland a football town, and more specifically a Browns town? This is a franchise that left. This is a franchise that came back. This is a franchise that embodies futility. Why does Cleveland love the NFL so much? Now, I don't mind them loving football, but you have Ohio State nearby. You know what I mean? Like you don't have to love the Browns. And yet you're not the first person that said, but anytime I talk to anybody in Cleveland, they talk about it is football number one. They don't care what the Indians do.
Yeah, right. It's always been the case. It always will be the case. Yeah, the Indians hit the right time when the team was stolen out of Cleveland by Art Modell for 3 years when there was no football team. And obviously the baseball team was very good at that time in the 90s. But I wouldn't even say that the fans necessarily love the NFL. They just love the Browns. There is a, you know, for the older fan, for the fan that's in his or her 60s or older, the team was great, right, when they were kids. And they won championships, and they had Jim Brown, and they had Paul Brown. But for everybody else, a lot of the, you know, people in their 30s and 40s, they remember the Bernie Kosar years or the Brian Sipe years,
sure,
depending on
how
old they are. And there was, you know,
that
the Browns
game against
the Jets.
That's the overtime game against the Jets.
That's right. And, you know, as much futility as there's been since Bernie Kosar has been gone for the last 20-25 years, for many years, 50s, 60s, 80s, the Browns were a good football team for large chunk. And so, you know, Canton, Ohio, which is about an hour from Cleveland, is the birthplace of football. You know, it sounds a little cliche again, but it's blue collar part of the country, very blue collar, and it's people just relate to football. They love high school football here. They love the Buckeyes, or at least most people do, and they love the Browns. And no matter how many times they get sand kicked in their face, it is a really loyal fan base. In fact, there are times where, you know, I'm critical of the franchise or the coach. You know, early this season, even a few games in, I was saying, I can't believe they brought Hugh Jackson back. He should have been fired. And there are a lot of fans angry at me early in the season for saying that. Now, by the last couple of weeks, as they've lost three in a row, most of the fans have come around and wanted him fired at this point. But the fans are loyal to the team. No matter how many times the team is bad, they stick with him. They love him. That will not go away at all, ever, for these fans. They're great fans.
Do you do anything, or do you do a lot on concussions? And is there a lot of football people? Do you find that high school football, you know, enrollment's down and things like that? Like, do you have any of that? Is that even a thought on your show, or is that immune to
COVID? Definitely. Yeah, no. We have talked about it a lot. In fact, my partner on my show, Dustin Fox, played. It was on the national championship Ohio State team, and right, played in the NFL for a number of years, played with Buffalo and the Eagles, and he was drafted by Minnesota. So he played in the league for a few years, and so he's worried about it. He thinks about it, and we've talked about it a lot of times. Yeah, you know, in the middle of the football season, we're not going to have usually long conversations about it, but certainly although it does come up even during the football season, but a lot of times, in the summer, you know, we've had hours and hours. We talked about new rules in football, protecting players, and had, you know, really in-depth conversations. Some of the shows we were talking about things like that, or, you know, domestic violence and how sports are dealing with it. Some of those have been, to me, the most fascinating shows we've done. So, yeah, we've certainly talked about that stuff quite a bit. There's not like a, hey, this is Cleveland and it's football, so let's not talk about that. No, we don't ignore those topics, good. especially when you hear about players, you know, and what's happening to them, you know, and you know, you have a junior sale situation or whatever. Those things certainly get talked about a lot.
Okay, I could just imagine. Now, this is a professional transition, ladies and gentlemen. So I was at the U.S. Open golf tournament for Forbes couple months ago, and there was one of the days, I think it was the second round, where it was raining and they were playing. It was, you know, it wasn't a hard rain, but I'm a wimp and I'm not walking the course when it's raining. So we were sitting in the media tent, and about four or five columnists, newspaper people, you know, from different parts of the country, are all sitting at this one table, and we're all shooting the bull, and we started playing a game. And the game was, if you could inherit one commissioner job, the money's equal, so don't use the money as a factor, but you inherit the sport, the popularity, but also the problems. Who would you rather be, Roger Goodell or Rob Manfred? That's a major league transition, kid.
I'd rather be Rob Manfred.
You're out of your mind. You're out of your mind.
Well, here's why. Here's why.
Well, no way.
Now you said the money's the same. Listen, football's in a much better position. More people love it. More people care about it. The game's in a much better place, although it's got its issues. I would love to be able to fix the problems of baseball, or at least contribute to fixing the problems. I don't want to be. I have been big time disappointed by Rob Manfred. I am so disappointed. I thought Bud Selig was a terrible, terrible commissioner. I thought Rob Manfred was going to be a great commissioner. I have been so let down by him, so disappointed by him. But I would love the challenge of taking on that job, and I don't know if I can get it done. But I love baseball so much that I would want to help fix it. I think it obviously needs a lot more fixing than football. So that's why I would pick it, only for the challenge of being able to try to fix the problems with the game. And there are, as much as I love it. I will always love baseball more than any other sport. I love football, but baseball will always be my favorite. But there are a lot of things that need fixing, and some are maybe harder than others. Some may even be impossible, but I would want to try.
Well, it's funny because at the time, there's one of the previous episodes of this show was with Tara Sullivan from the Boston Globe. And we did this podcast, and we asked this exact question. And hands down, of all the six people, it was, you would want to be Roger Goodell. Because the theory is that outside of concussions, take concussions out of it, most of football's problems are because of a lack of leadership. You know, the lack of true leadership led to the nonsense with Trump, the nonsense with the social justice, the nonsense with the oversaturation, the 20% drop in ratings, which has seen a nice rebound this year. But at the time, a lot of that could be very fixable with proper leadership. Yeah. I think baseball's too screwed. And I think baseball's in a full-on crisis. I think that the idea that at least football's problems out, again, I don't have the solution for concussions, but outside of concussions, I just think the NFL's problems are fixable, and with proper leadership, you can fix them. Baseball, I think it's inherent because the teams have gotten more focused on manufacturing wins and less on the entertainment. And the strategies that have been implemented to baseball all work. The strategies work. They work if you are trying to build a winner. But the advent of the shift, the introduction of launch angle. Adam, I will tell you this real quick. I was at a lunch at Citizens Bank Park. It was an afternoon day game during the week, and I went down there, and I went to the ballpark, and I was sitting. You remember Aaron Seeley, the pitcher?
Pitcher.
Aaron Seeley is a scout now, and so we're sitting there having lunch, and he brought his friend with, you know, another scout buddy, who didn't know at the time that I was in the media, and as soon as he found out that I was in the media, he immediately stopped talking. But what he was telling me. What he was telling me was that there are teams that, because of the implementation of the shift, that there are teams that teach on the major and minor league level. The player's number one priority when they get into the batter's box is launch angle, and contact is number two.
Yeah.
When you tell me that, because the theory is that if you're just focused on making contact, they're playing your position. They're playing the defense that will get you out. So even if you hit a line drive up the middle, there's a guy there. So that's not valuable. That there's a better opportunity that if you use the proper launch angle, if you swing and miss, that's fine. Because if you do it again and again and again, you're going to connect and it's going to go above that shift. And that's how launch angle got created. And this is not something that's a fad. This is not amphetamines. Like, this is something they're teaching.
Right.
And the numbers that, you know, and Jason Stark was also, I'm plugging past episodes of the podcast, but Jason Stark came on the podcast and he gave this number when it was a projection. And now it's come out because the 2018 season's over. But baseball had 11,000 less balls hit in play than 2008. That's not long ago. 2008. No. I covered 2008. Number. That's a crazy number. And 3 minutes, 49 seconds between balls hit and play. The players aren't marketable. No one could pick Mike Trout out of a lineup. And you're in your, what, late 30s?
Late 40s. I wish late 30s.
Wow. Oh, you are older than me. You're in your late 40s. When our generation is in their 70s and 80s, I think baseball's done. I think baseball is in. I think baseball, because the 30-year-olds are hanging on. The 20-year-olds are so disinterested. The teenagers could give a crap. I just don't know how those people are going to suddenly become baseball fans. Why? Because some players go on social media and say some political things. Like what's going to make Jose Altuve relevant? This is it's more than marketing. The most popular person at the World Series was David Ortiz. Like, people don't know who Mookie Betts is. They don't care who Jackie Bradley Jr. is. You talk about this Red Sox team as the best team in Red Sox history. Baloney. They're playing in an American League that's filled with crap. There was one team in the American League Central that was above 500.
The game's got a ton of issues. There's no doubt about it. And you may be right. This train may not be able to stop it. I'm not sure what the answer is on the launch angle. I mean, I think a lot of diehard baseball guys, we've become so snobby when it comes to the sport that when casual fans or non-fans say, you should do this or you should do that, we get so angry about it because we like our traditions that we don't open our eyes or our ears to any possible changes. And while I do think marketing is part of the issue, I think you're right. Ultimately, the game is long and it can be boring if you're in this age of social media, in this age of short attention spans, people are just not going to sit through long games day after day after day again. You're right. People don't know who the star players. Forget the star player. I mean, they don't even know the star players, let alone the rank and file player. And as you mentioned about the age, you know, I saw recently a study where it was like, what is the average age of each sports fan? And the young fans, they love basketball. And they don't even, and a lot of young fans that I come across, they don't even have a favorite team. They just have favorite players. And
right.
They love
it's like
the
a reality
players.
Show. Right, right. It's
right.
Like a reality show of players. Yep. Like,
yeah,
everybody knows who this guy's friends with in the NBA. They know, right. You know, who this guy's enemies, and this guy doesn't like this one. And you know, the NBA makes a big deal. You know, you never hear, this is something that baseball can't escape. It's held to such a high standard. You know, no one goes on any national or local show and breaks down the third quarter of a Portland-Denver game. Like that doesn't happen. But yet in baseball, all they talk about is the actual product on the sport because nobody talks about the players. No one's talking.
Right.
No one could tell you what Anthony Rizzo's personality is. You could say on your radio show, I have this little game. I would say on a radio show, come out of a commercial break and play a random soundbite of Mike Trout and give a t-shirt to the first guy that can identify him. And yet, did it for Derek Jeter or A-Rod or Ortiz or Barry Bonds or Ken Griffey Jr., people would recognize these guys in a second. That's not an East Coast, West Coast thing. There's none of that. You have these players that are just anonymous and they're boring. And I'm sorry. This game has changed so much. I thought it was personal because 2015, I've told this story on the podcast before. You know, my best friend was killed, Daryl Hamilton, and I had to walk away from 2015. Like, I couldn't watch that season. But 2017, I came back with a real open mind. It's like a different game.
Yeah, I think there are other things that have hurt the sport as well. You know, there's infighting between management and players again, and we could be headed to another striker lineup, which would be a disaster for the sport.
Sure.
We have two different rules for the two different leagues. They're playing interleague play every day. It's stupid. I think we need to have the DH in the National League. Well, you have to have a uniform set of rules, and since you're not getting rid of the DH. I also think Major League Baseball has been very short-sighted in terms of, you know, promoting teams on TV. Like, it's always about the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Cubs, and the Dodgers, and the other teams were ignored. We had the Indians-Astros series in the playoffs. All the games were in the daytime. You know, you've got Yankee fans and Red Sox fans and Dodger fans and Cub fans. They're in those cities, but there are not that many of those cities left. And you have, like, in people, it was the playoffs, and yet all the fans in Cleveland were angry and couldn't watch the game because it was on while they were at work. In a city where you need to build your fan base more than you do in New York and Boston and Chicago, it was short-sighted to say, well, we're going to get better ratings with the Yankees and Red Sox, instead of thinking, hey, maybe it's better for baseball if we put the Indians on at night and try to grow that fan base. It's all these things combined with the slowness of the game, the lack of personality, the lack of uniform rules. Every team, it's bland. Every team plays the same way. Back when we were kids, you had some teams that were power teams, some teams that were pitching.
You had a National League strike zone.
Right, you had the speed to the teams with a bunch of guys with stolen bases. Yep. I don't really love the sacrifice bunt. I think it's a bad baseball play, but there were teams that had really good bunters. Now you have shifts. You have a third baseman playing almost at second base, and guys can't hit the ball to the left side of the field.
I don't know how.
So yeah, it's a negative. And I will continue to watch baseball and love baseball, but I do think you're right. Unless you made some, and maybe that would even be too late. Like, maybe, what if they cut the game down to 7 innings? What if they limited pitching changes? You know, if they made drastic changes to the game, would that be enough? Is it
too late? I'll give you two as a proposal. Tell me if you like these two.
Yeah.
The first thing I would do is I would outlaw the shift. I'd put a line from the point of home plate to straightaway center field. I wouldn't draw it, but I would have it there. And before the pitch is thrown, the first baseman, the second baseman, the right fielder can't cross it. The shortstop, the third baseman, the left fielder can't cross it. The only people that can play on both sides of the line are the center fielder, the pitcher, and the catcher. If you did that, that would be part of your balls in play issue. You know what I mean? It wouldn't fix 11,000, but it would fix it. It would help you with 4,000. You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
That's the first one. The second one. That I would do, and I think baseball's headed to this. And this is, I get this from writers. You know, I didn't make this up by any stretch. And I want no credit for this, but I think there's going to be radical realignment. I think it's going to be one league. I think it's going to be an Eastern Conference and a Western Conference, and I think that it's going to be like the NBA kind of. And I think you'll have a division where you'll have. Boston, the two New Yorks, Philadelphia, Washington, all in one division. You'll have the Brewers, the Twins, the Tigers, all in the same division.
Right.
I think that'll be where it'll cut down on travel. It'll make the season a little easier. It'll cut down on travel. And I think that's where it's headed. The question will be, is does baseball want two more teams? Because first of all, if you have one realignment, you don't have interleague play anymore. You know what I'm saying? Because you only have one league. And if you can recreate rivalries based on geography, just take the hockey model. You know what I mean? The hockey model is successful because you have 8 miles separating, six NHL teams in the Northeast. And they love it. They love to hate each other. They love to play all the time. And
that's right.
You know, fans want to see the Rangers play the Flyers and the Islanders play the Devils and like all that stuff. That stuff's great. Well, you could try to create that. Those are the two suggestions that I would have. I remember I did a Forbes article about when the Manfred tried to, and I like Rob Manfred, so I have a different perspective on him. But remember he cut the amount of time in between innings from to 2 minutes and 20 seconds. And I said, and I talked to two sales directors of two radio networks for this article. And I was very honest when I said this question. And I said, did you ever talk to any of your clients about doing a 20-second commercial just so that you could give the play-by-play guy like 5 seconds to set up the inning before the pitch is thrown? And they laughed in my face. They won't concede 10 seconds of ad revenue. They're not shortening the season. They're not changing the season. They're not doing anything. That's going to be 162 games because that union and that, you know, the theme of the playoff games that I was at, and I was only at a couple, the theme of the playoffs was Manfred. And I saw Rob, and the first thing he was asking people, what about that new lawyer the union hired? What about that new lawyer? What's going to happen with that? And I'm telling you, man, you know, that camp that they had in Phoenix, in, you know, with all the unsigned free agents, that pissed a lot of people off, man. And, you know, the fact that that certain, you know, JD Martinez doesn't sign for 2 weeks and Jake Arrieta doesn't sign for 2 weeks. I'm telling you, man, I think they are headed to Armageddon. I think they're going to have
that's a
fight of all fights. That'll be a disaster. But you don't have a game that's good enough to come back this time.
Not this time, no.
Right. You don't have Cal Ripken. You don't have Sosa and McGuire. Like, you're not close to that anymore.
No, the game is hurting. The World Series ratings were terrible. The World Series, and you had Boston and L.A., and you still had terrible World Series ratings because, you know, you talk about realignment and the regional thing. Like, you've lost the fan. Like, there used to be a lot of fans that would just watch the World Series because it was the World Series. And those people are gone. When it comes to baseball, people root for their team, and that's it. They're not. There's so much less interest in baseball. Like the local ratings are still pretty good for a lot of teams, but when it comes to national ratings, it stinks. And I think that's going to continue to be a problem. And this could be the death knell if there is a lockout or a strike. You know, it's an issue.
They're done.
And I think that, you know, baseball people that always get mad when people complain about the negatives of the sport have to realize that there are some negatives. Yeah, it can be annoying if you love baseball to constantly hear people. Even me, like John Smoltz, I love John Smoltz, but every game he complains about all the relief pitching. And eventually I'm like, okay, John, we get it. I don't like it either, but what's the point of continuing to bring it up all the time? So, yeah, sometimes it can be annoying when it's brought up all the time. But that doesn't mean there aren't real problems and that they don't need to be dealt with. And if we pretend they don't exist or we pretend that baseball's so great and it's been here forever and it's always going to be here, well, like you say, in 40, 50 years, I mean, maybe it doesn't matter for us. But there are some people that are 20 and teenagers that love baseball. I'm trying to get my son to love baseball. But when he's my age or older, the sport may be in big, huge trouble by that point.
Yeah, no, we could do tons on this. There'll be many podcasts this off season about this, and we'll have to get you back, and we can do a baseball centric one. And I'd like to do some roundtables about it. Look, I'm all for fixing. I don't have an agenda. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not. I was angry at baseball, you know, because everything in 2015 was a reminder. When you lose somebody, you know, losing Daryl, and I've said this before, like losing Daryl was. When I would be at the ballpark, the camaraderie, the friends that you would see and the, you know, the writers and the players and whomever. And then once the second inning came, all I kept thinking about was who I'm not texting. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it was personal for a while, but now it's different. Now it's not that, it's that I'm coming back and I'm part of that tech. I am a tech nerd. You know what I mean? I'm an iPad guy, and I'm those kinds of things. And you know, I wrote in a Forbes article that I did my taxes during a Brewers Rockies game. I'll watch Netflix in press boxes. It's not holding my attention, and it's a scary thing because you know it's so much of. You know, my career has been because of this sport, but I'm fearful right. for it. And I worry about it because I know you're a big baseball fan, and you can hear it in your voice. You can hear the passion.
I know. It saddens me. It makes me really sad when people don't love baseball. And I wonder, you know, will my son stick with it? Will he get into it? He's 5 years old, and I try to get him to watch with me. I have this dream of taking him to every ballpark in the big leagues, but I don't like the way the game is headed. There are a lot of negatives about it, and a lot needs to be fixed. I do think, you know, we're seeing more personality in the game in terms of celebrations and stuff. I think that's a positive. I like the commercial that baseball did when they had Ken Griffey Jr. saying, let the kids play. I think that's a positive. I think DH in the National League are getting rid of, you know, just having one league, as you said, would be a positive. I'm with you on the shifts. I think we need to put some drastic rules into place in terms of bullpen moves. There's a lot. How many times do we see a baseball game where the first five or six innings go really fast, like an hour, 15 minutes, and then the last three, four innings take 2 hours? It's just crazy.
And what Smoltz doesn't say enough is, you know, the probabilities, because these bullpens are so great and these guys throw so hard, the probabilities are such that the odds that you're going to see a comeback are so small that there's no reason to stay connected. You know, the idea was, if your team was trailing, you know, 5-2 in the seventh inning, you still had 9 outs to play with. And now it's like, come on, if you don't get a hit in the seventh inning, you're done for. It's over. Right. And there's so much else to do. That's the other thing. There's so much else. Like, we're in this glory time, and I talk about this on the other podcast. There's such a great time. There's 17 Marvel shows out right now. Like, there's so much stuff out there. How am I going to stay with, you know, Pirates Royals or something? I don't know.
I love baseball. I love, you know, I'm a Cubs fan. I love baseball. And yet I watched part of the game last night and did not watch the whole thing, believe it or not.
I get it. I saw the end. I saw the end when John Henry called it the greatest Red Sox team ever. And I know statistically they won the most games, but please, they don't hold a candle to the 04 team. They beat up on the Orioles and the Texas Rangers and some of the crap, the dregs of the American League. But
And that was a problem too. You had so many teams, especially in the American League, that were not trying to win. The American League Central was a disgrace. It was a disgrace. In baseball, the one thing that's always supposed to be great about baseball is that, and this is in football too, and this is not the case in basketball, and yet people love it. Like in basketball, we know with 100% certainty that the teams that are most likely to win, we know they're going to be in the playoffs. But you don't know that in baseball. But this year with the Indians, you knew with 100% certainty that they were going
to
make
all
playoffs.
They had to do is show up. Right.
Yeah, and that's not good for the game.
Right. My thing on the Indians that I said was they didn't have one day where they showed up at the ballpark and they needed to win.
That's 100% true. When the playoffs start, now the Indians are a talented team. There's no doubt about it. They're not quite up there with the Astros, Red Sox, and Yankees, but I don't think they were as far off as some people thought, especially if you look at what they have in their starting rotation. Bauer getting hurt and not being able to really start, although I think they mishandled that. I think they mishandled their rotation, frankly, badly 2 years in a row. I said right before the series started, I said, you know, I think the Indians have a decent chance, but it worries me that they haven't played a game that mattered the entire season. Yep. I mean, you know, the Astros did. The A's made them work for it. And certainly the Yankees and Red Sox had to play. But the Indians didn't. Everybody else did. You know, the Cubs and Bulls and the Dodgers and Rockies played down to the final season and beyond. You know, that was a concern, and they seemed completely flat when the playoffs started.
Adam, we could do this for hours. I'm telling you, I knew this was good. I'm getting the evil eye from my family. I'm sure you're getting the evil eye from yours. I'm telling you, we could do this for hours. We have to get you back. This was such a great idea. This is why I love having this podcast. I'm telling you, man, it is so much fun to have these kinds of conversations. I knew we were going to go off on tangents. I appreciate anybody who's still listening.
I appreciate you having me. Maybe next time we can get into how it took me 10 years after the show ended to start watching The Wire, and I binge watched 5 seasons in 2 months.
I never got into The Wire.
Oh, I never I did either, but somebody talked me into it. And this summer, when there was nothing else on, my wife and I watched I watched the first season myself, and I said to my wife, "You have to take this journey with me." And we rewatched the first season and watched all five seasons. It was incredible. I'm obsessed with TV. I'm obsessed with movies.
Very good stuff.
But anyway.
All right. This episode is dedicated to the people who lost their lives in Pittsburgh this weekend at the horrific shooting at the synagogue in suburban Pittsburgh. Adam the Bull. People never use your last name, right? Is that a secret?
No. Yeah, not really. It's not a secret, but you could find it, but I don't really use it on the air.
All right. Adam the Bull. How'd you get the nickname?
Well, it started when I was a kid, because I was actually, I'm not very tall. I'm only 5'8".
I told you we can never end this show.
Yeah, I'm only 5'8", but I was a tall, young kid. Like in the second, third grade, I was like the biggest kid in the class, and I just stopped growing. But when I played baseball as a kid, I played first base, and I was a big Cubs fan, and I was a big kid. And the Cubs at the time, of course, had Leon Bull Durham as their first baseman.
Oh, okay.
And
that's
so
nice.
Yeah, so my friends started calling me that. But then when I went to college, I had a roommate who also was named Adam. So people were like, "One of you guys have a nickname?" And I said, "Well, he's called me Bull." And it really took off from there. I started using it on the college radio station, and it took off.
So much fun, man. Well, thank you again. How can people find you online? Again, for people who don't listen or live in Cleveland, how can they find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Adam the Bull Fan. I do have a Facebook, but I rarely look at it. So stick with the Twitter, Adam the Bull Fan. And I always try to tweet back at people, you know, if they ask a question. Because I know some people in the business will just ignore people on Twitter, and I try not to do that. So
there you
if
go.
You tweet at me, I will tweet back at you. And it's been a pleasure, Seth. Thanks, man.
Nah, it's been a lot of fun. That's Adam the Bull. My name is Seth Everett. Thank you for downloading. Thank you. Please continue to subscribe, rate, and review. That's how iTunes gets markets podcasts. The more you rate, the more you review, the higher up the charts we will go. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Seth Everett. This has been Sports with Friends.
If you want me to stay, I'll be around today to be available for you to see. I'm about to go. To stay here, I got to be me. You'll never be in doubt. That's what it's all about. You can't take me for granted and smile. Count on days I'm gone. Forget reaching me by phone. Because I promise I'll be gone for a while. When you see me again, I hope that you have been the kind of person that you really are now. We got to get in straight. How could I ever be late when you're my woman taking up my time?